Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is The Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Hello and welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. If you are a regular listener, then thank you so much for giving up your time every single week. I hope that what we talk about here is valuable to you and that it is making your life better, giving you improved quality of life, even extending your life, and certainly helping you to reduce some of those complications that can so easily come about due to the risk associated with diabetes. Anyway, it is great to have you with us. We've got a fantastic packed show today. I've got an amazing interview with an amazing lady who has actually really just shown what it takes and what it means to be able to live with diabetes, embrace it, conquer it, control it, and achieve amazing things. I'll leave you in suspense as to who that is. All will be revealed later in the show. In the meantime, I want to point out that this is International Diabetes Week, and indeed, Sunday, the 14th of November, is going to be Diabetes Day. And this, of course, is a day when we celebrate diabetes in some respects, but in many respects, we just want to raise awareness, okay? We want to raise awareness of the fact that diabetes is pretty rife around the world. In fact, so much so that I actually decided that this week we would have a bit of a double whammy, in so much as the diabetes show is obviously going to be about diabetes, but also the Foot Health Show is about diabetes and its effects on feet, which many of you will know is a real passion of mine. So the show that we have there is with renowned podiatric surgeon from the USA, David Armstrong, who is an amazing guy, has done so much for raising awareness around the globe. And I think you'll find that a fascinating interview. So head over to that one. Stick here for now. Listen to this one. And then later on, head over to the Foot Health Show and listen to what David has to say there about diabetes and the feet. And please, 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 both of these, if you know anyone else, pass it on to them, okay? If you know people who have got diabetes, definitely pass it on. If you've got people that potentially have got pre-diabetes, then definitely they should be listening as well, because pre-diabetes really, most of the time, it's going to click over into diabetes. And even if it doesn't, they're still living with high blood sugars, which is still going to be doing some of the damage that diabetes would do as well over time. Anyway, rest of the show today is going to be largely about type 1, actually, because the lady that we have on, who is an international athlete, has type 1 diabetes. Giving you a few more clues there. You'll be able to guess who it is, maybe, by the time we finish playing the song. Anyway, before we do that, I just want to share a few things. I thought, you know what? Diabetes Week, Diabetes Day. Let's just share some of the facts and figures. Okay, this is from the International Diabetes Federation's website, IDF.org. And I'm just going to run through some of their facts and figures that they do share there. So this is dated from 2019. They do updates every now and again. 2019, approximately 463 million adults, that's between 20 and 79 years, were living with diabetes. And by 2045, this will rise to 700 million. Are you one of those? See, you're not alone. There are many, many people with diabetes. Take comfort in so much as you're not alone. Take comfort in so much as there's lots of research going on how to better manage it. But please, just make sure that you are one of those that is actually looking after yourself, looking after your blood sugars, looking after your feet, your eyes, etc. Next statistic, the proportion of people with type 2 diabetes is increasing in most countries. And of course, type 2 is largely the one that can be prevented. 79% of adults with diabetes are living in low and middle income countries. That's probably not something that you would think would be the case, but it is. So lower middle income countries is where the majority of people are living. Moving on, one in five of people who are above 65 years old have diabetes. One in two, that's 232 million people with diabetes, were undiagnosed. Wow. So one in two people who have got diabetes actually don't know they've got it. And of course, if you don't know you've got it, you can't deal with it. So you're living with high blood sugars, which is largely what's going to cause your problems. Diabetes caused 4.2 million deaths in 2019. Diabetes caused at least $760 billion in health expenditure in 2019. And 10% of the total spending on adults' healthcare, that is, $760 billion. More than 1.1 million children and adolescents are living with type 1 diabetes, and such a need for a cure for that, to prevent people developing it. So want that to happen in my lifetime. More than 20 million live births, that's one in six live births, are affected by diabetes during pregnancy. And 374 million people are at increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. So if you add that to the total who've got it at the moment, 463 million, and they reckon it will increase to 700 million by 2045, I guess that that's probably where a lot of those extra ones by 2045 will have come from, those 374 million people at the moment living at increased risk of developing it. And there's so many things you can do to prevent developing type 2 diabetes, largely your diet and largely, of course, exercise as well, living healthily. So we've done many, many shows on that, and we will do many, many more shows on that. It's a repeated message, and really we should be taking note of it. So we haven't got time to go into that today. Please do check out some of the other shows. Check out our different magazine articles that we do. In the Health Triangle magazine. The latest one is out for November, and that is talking about Charcot foot, or Jericho foot, as I call it. If you aren't subscribing to Health Triangle magazine, it's not just my articles. There's lots of articles from all the presenters. Go and subscribe to it and have a read about what we talk about there about Jericho foot, a.k.a. Charcot foot. Anyway, without further ado, we are going to play the first song chosen by our guest today. And that song is by Alicia Keys, and it is called Girl on Fire. Hope you enjoy it.
She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away. Oh, she got both feet on the ground, and she's burning it down. Oh, she got her head in the clouds, and she's not backing down. This girl is on fire. This girl is on fire.
That was Alicia Keys and Girl on Fire. And you're listening to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. And my guest today is Melanie Stevenson-Gray, and she chose that song. Melanie, please tell us a little bit about what that song's all about.
Oh, it's a really important song to me. It just seemed to kind of capture a lot of what I was feeling at a particular time or represent what I was feeling. So I was really fortunate that I was nominated by Diabetes UK to carry the Olympic torch back in 2012, which was a life-changing moment for me, because 20 years ago when I was diagnosed with diabetes, I could never have imagined that I'd be standing on a stage in front of 20,000 people trying to show what was possible with having a chronic condition. But here I was, and that song just reminds me of carrying that Olympic torch, lighting the Olympic flame, and all of the wonderful people that I've met as a result of that as well ever since.
Wow, okay, so quite a story there then. So the fact that you had the diabetes and actually got you to that position to be able to do that.
Yeah, and you know, it's not what you expect at all. When you're diagnosed with something like diabetes, you really don't know what the future is going to hold, and it can be a really scary time as well. And so to know that there are actually positive things that might come out of it is just really an incredible way to look at it, I hope.
Cool. I didn't twig, actually. I was reading a bit of blurb about you, and I think you were diagnosed, you just mentioned it, 20 years ago, so in 2001, yeah? And yeah. Before we came on air here, I was actually saying to you, my daughter's got something probably even more in common with you. And that's, it hadn't clicked in my brain, actually, that my daughter was actually 10 years older. I'd read it as being 2011, and that's when she was diagnosed. So I thought, well, maybe you were actually diagnosed in the same month or something like that. But no, you preceded her by 10 years. But yeah, she was diagnosed in 2011.
We're going to take a quick break from the show now, so please don't go away. It's just time for our station sponsors to share a message about their product. Please hang on, and we'll be back in just a minute to continue the show.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Galar Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now, but did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut. Protect what protects you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
That was an ad from our station sponsors. You're listening to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. So thank you for listening, and let's continue with the show.
Tell us a little bit about your life up to now, because you were an athlete as well. It wasn't just randomly picked to do the torch. You were an athlete as well, yeah?
Yes, that's right. Up until recently, having a baby 9 months ago, I was a 100 and 200 metre sprinter. It was something that I took up 3 years after being diagnosed with diabetes, and I just fell in love with it from the very beginning. Not that I was any good at it when I started, which just didn't matter. It was just the fact that I was able to kind of, it was helpful in managing my diabetes, but also it wasn't so much that I was labelled as a person with diabetes. I was also an athlete, and it just helped me to kind of overcome that, really.
Wow, okay. And you've gone on now to do some training in another field, I believe. Is that right?
Yes. I did go on to retrain to become a diabetes dietitian, because I've seen, you know, through learning to carb count when I got my insulin pump, through, you know, kind of being diagnosed as well, seeing the influence of nutrition and with the athletics as well. I just wanted people to have an easier journey because I really had to search for the information and get specialist help when I was looking for advice on nutrition. But it's this really powerful tool. And I think that the more people that have access to that information, the better. So, yeah, I retrained and have been qualified for a number of years now.
Brilliant. That's excellent stuff. But we're here today to talk a little bit about, we're going to dip in and out of your experience with insulin, but we're here really because it's World Diabetes Day coming up. And also we've got, it's the centenary. Well, you tell them, what is the centenary of?
Yeah, it's a huge, huge event, really, for those of us living with diabetes and taking insulin, because it's been 100 years since insulin was kind of discovered and was able to be used by people. And I find it difficult to explain the magnitude of that, because without insulin I wouldn't be here. And the discovery is within almost, well, pretty much living memory, so we're really not talking that long ago that insulin was discovered. And before insulin was discovered, people were diagnosed with diabetes, but there was no treatment, or really the only treatment was to kind of to go on a very, very low calorie diet. And that bought people months rather than years. And so it was a fatal condition. So I am so grateful for the discovery of insulin, and also for the advancements that have come because of it, you know, after that, with the advancements in technology as well. It's been a whirlwind. I've seen a lot change in the last 20 years. Some I hoped for, some things I couldn't even have imagined. And I hope that in a way as well, that even though we haven't found a cure for diabetes, there is a lot of hope in the advancements that we've seen in insulin and different technologies as well, because things are moving forward with the treatment of the condition. Because even though it's a lot easier to manage probably than it was 20 years ago, it's still a really challenging condition, as you'll know with your daughter as well, that it's a real balancing act. It's not easy. And so the more kind of technology, information, education we have access to, the better.
No, absolutely. It's I guess with my daughter being 10 years after you, you see even more of a change, because I suppose in 2001 there weren't really pumps around then, were there?
No, not so much. So much. They might have been very, very few and far between, because I've been on my pump for about 13 years now. So I spent 7 years on injections, and there aren't too many people that I meet that have been on an insulin pump longer. So back when I was diagnosed, I was on 2 injections a day of a mixed kind of insulin that was, you know, to cover all your set meals. And it was quite rigid, really, quite restrictive. And, you know, we don't eat the same thing every day. We don't eat the same way every day, or necessarily at the same time. And the regimen didn't always suit that. But now things have moved forward where we have got much more freedom and flexibility.
Absolutely. Okay. So you use a pump most of the time now, yeah?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. And what would you say is the biggest advantage of using that for you? I know some people are going to say there's no way they're going to go on a pump. They're just adamant they won't do it, and what have you. But what would you say to people about the biggest advantages that you personally have found using that?
I think for me personally, the flexibility, really, because I used to find, as I said, I've been doing athletics when I was on injections and I was on a pump as well. So I've seen both sides. And it is a very individual thing. I completely respect people who don't want to go on a pump, because it's not for everyone. But what I found is that it does give you that element of flexibility. So if I give you the example of my athletics, where I used to give my injection and maybe I would be able to reduce a little bit of my insulin ready for exercise, but it would be a lot of kind of guesswork involved and a lot of trial and error. And once that insulin has gone in, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. It's really tricky. And exercise is something that can really make the insulin react a lot quicker, and it can drop your blood glucose levels more quickly as well. Whereas I find on an insulin pump, I can do things like temporary background rates. So I can work out how much insulin I'm going to need for a number of hours. If my training changes, say the time of training changes, I can respond and adapt to that. I can respond to things like my blood sugar's fluctuating a little bit because I get quite an adrenaline rush for things like competitions, and I can just respond and react a lot better than I could when I was on injections. But I do understand at the same time it's quite tricky because your insulin pump is always with you, so mm-hmm. you can always kind of, in a way, you can kind of see that you've got diabetes, whereas when you're on injections in pens, you do your yeah. injection, you put it away, and nobody can see that you've got the condition. But that's something that I've come to terms with because it's been so much better for me being on a pump.
Okay, thank you. And I think another piece of technology as well, which I'm sure you use as well, is a continuous glucose monitor, of course, as well. And that, I think everyone should give that a try because it shows you so much that you haven't got a clue that is going on. And that's again where the pump can come in. From my experience with my daughter, is what's going on when you're sleeping? What's happening to those blood sugars? And the great thing about a pump, of course, is you can alter the levels of the insulin going in, not just giving yourself an injection once a day for the background one.
Absolutely. I mean, the way I explain it to people who are new to diabetes with continuous glucose monitoring is that, say you're kind of doing finger prick checks, which is what we would all normally do, you can see a snapshot in time. So it's like a photograph. You can't necessarily see where you've been. You can't see where you're going. But with a lot of the continuous glucose monitors, you can actually see exactly, as you say, what's happened overnight, which is a time that a lot of people with diabetes worry about, and a lot of parents with children with diabetes worry about, understandably. And you can also see with a lot of the CGM, they'll give you trend arrows so you can see where things are moving. So, you know, if you're looking to embark on exercise, or you're looking to go on a long walk, perhaps you're going into a meeting in the office, it gives you that opportunity to do something about it rather than your blood sugars kind of creeping up on you and causing problems.
Absolutely. It's, I think it's so important. And now some of them also have an alarm on, don't they? They'll actually alarm you if you're going low. And I wish my daughter had that. She's got the, I won't mention the name of it, but she's got one of the continuous glucose monitors that hasn't got an alarm. And the other night, she's just recently moved out of our home and into another place, which is exciting for her. But she had a hypo in the middle of the night, and she basically fell down the second half of the stairs as a result, trying to get down to the, what she had in her room wasn't good enough. So she had to go down to the fridge, and she fell down the bottom half of the stairs. And had she had the alarm on, hopefully it would have woken her up a little bit earlier, maybe.
So. And that's the frightening thing, and that's the reality, exactly as you say, that so much of us are dealing with, because sometimes you're in such a deep sleep that, as you say, it might wake you. You might wake yourself when you're having a hypo. Some people don't have any hypo awareness at all, whereas I know some of the CGMs with the alarms are able to predict in advance. So you might get 20 minutes warning that things are dropping rapidly, which can literally save lives.
Yeah. Technology is certainly extremely helpful. It's a bit of a pain at times as well, especially when you're useless with it like I am. But anyway, but in this instance, it's great. Listen, Melanie, I'd like you to just, if you could, just turn back the clock. Maybe you don't want to think about this, but just turn back the clock to the time of your diagnosis. Can you remember what happened there? Because there's going to be people listening here who have got type 1, maybe they've got relatives who've got who haven't got it but could develop it. What was it like for you, and what should people be aware of at the point of being diagnosed?
So I was 13 back when I was diagnosed with type 1, and I had what I now know to be all of the typical symptoms. So I was going to the toilet a lot, particularly overnight. So I'd be waking up really frequently to go for a wee. And I lost about 2 stone in weight. I also was incredibly thirsty, thirst that I'd never known anything like it. All through the day, all through the night, I'd be waking up to drink the tap water because I was just so desperate. And I was incredibly tired as well, so I was off school for a couple of days because I was just falling asleep and really struggling. And so we didn't suspect diabetes at all. We didn't have a clue what it was, but we knew something wasn't right. So my mum took me to see the GP. He did a urine test and then kind of gave us a call a couple of minutes later to say, you need to get up to the hospital. So that was where I was diagnosed with type 1 that same day. And I was really fortunate that I didn't have to stay in hospital overnight. I was able to spend the night at home, which was something that my paediatric hospital team really believed in, if it was possible and safe to do so. And I think that made for, if it's possible, a much less traumatic diagnosis, because it's all scary enough, let alone being in hospital for the night as well. Like, you need your home comforts and your family around you at a time like that. So then I went home, and the next day my super diabetes nurses came to visit me, showed me how to do things like insulin injections. So I did those. I felt empowered enough to do those for myself from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they told me about carbohydrates as well, and the role of those in all of this diabetes management. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things that they did for me, which I'll be forever grateful for, was that they went into my school and spoke to my teachers about type 1 diabetes as well, which was exactly how I discovered athletics, because my teachers knew that they didn't need to exclude me from anything. I could do sports days, I could do school trips. Mm-hmm. And my school then supported me for the rest of my academic life and introduced me to athletics because of those diabetes nurses. And as you know, I went on to have an international career then. So even though it was an incredibly confusing, scary, strange time, at the same time, I knew, even as a teenager, I knew that I was seriously unwell. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible how quickly I started to feel better once I went on to the insulin injections. So yeah, it was a whirlwind, but yeah, that's where we were all those years ago.
Yeah, it's a similar story, and I'm sure it is for most people who develop it. My daughter, she was 11. It was 4 days before starting secondary school.
Oh gosh!
But yeah, she'd been unwell over the holiday. We'd been on holiday, and she'd been unwell during that time. And I suspected it because I'm a podiatrist. I know about diabetes and whatever. So we took it to a doctor, and similar story. She was kept in overnight, actually, but yeah. But anyway.
Well, there's no good time to be diagnosed, but you know, like, it's not enough being in high school and everything being new, trying to make new friends, and you've got all that to come to terms with and get to grips with as well. Gosh.
Anyway, sorry to keep taking you back to the point of your diagnosis and all. I want to ask you now, and this is, well, hopefully some of it will be good. I think the song by Ronan Keating, Life is a Roller Coaster, is something I play a lot on this session, because diabetes, it is like that. I just want to ask you, what are some of the real highs that you've had and some of the real lows? I'm not talking about your blood sugar levels. I'm talking about just in your walk with diabetes. It doesn't have to be necessarily related to diabetes, but what are some of the things that really stand out over the last 20 years of being actually wow moments, and then maybe some of the downsides?
So you're absolutely right. There have been a roller coaster of events and emotions during the time that I've had diabetes. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned that I started using an insulin pump 13 years ago, but I had to go onto one because I started becoming really insulin resistant. Mm-hmm. And I had a really difficult time back then transitioning from injections to an insulin pump, so much so that when I was studying my first degree, I had to take a year out because I was really unwell. It was, you know, it happened the way it was meant to, because that's how I discovered volunteering. But going on to the insulin pump, I had to agree with my medical team that I would stop athletics because there wasn't any advice on how to manage diabetes, insulin pumps, everything else. And it was quite hard to kind of get my basal rates right, let alone with adding sport into the mix as well. So I honestly believed there was potential that that was going to be the end of my athletics career. And of course, my health had to come first. So I can't say that I accepted it, but it was something that I acknowledged was a possibility. But thankfully, I was just really determined to get back to it and worked really hard with the hospital team to try and do it safely. And a few months afterwards, I won a British medal. So that was going from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high for me. It just meant everything. It wouldn't have mattered what colour that medal was. And to be honest, actually, just getting to those championships probably would have been enough, and getting a medal was a bonus. But it just reiterated what I really needed to know at that time, that diabetes didn't have to get in the way of me achieving in sport or whatever my dreams would have been at that time. I think some of the other highlights have been having my own Nike campaign back in 2012 during the Olympics, because a lot of the images that they used included my insulin pump. So I was really, really honoured that this huge sporting brand would accept me as I was with my diabetes, and completely understood that that was part of me. It wasn't something that I wanted to hide away from or anything like that. It was something that is as much part of me as my hair colour and my eye colour, really. So that was really nice, because, again, it was an opportunity to show people that it's possible to do sport even though you've got type 1 diabetes. Because when I carried the Olympic torch, a lot of people that I met afterwards said to me, I had no idea that that was something that you could do, because sport is, you know, an exercise is quite challenging with the condition and the unpredictability that can sometimes come with it.
Wow, quite a story there. And congratulations on that medal. That's brilliant. Because you ran for Wales, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
The accent's there.
it's been great.
Good. Great stuff. How important would you say are your friends and family in your walk with diabetes, your management of it?
I think they're incredibly important. Whilst I acknowledge that it is a condition that for the most part you manage yourself by yourself, and that you can feel quite alone with managing the condition, you do need that support from friends and family at the same time. Because, for example, every year since I've been diagnosed, my mum would treat it as more of a celebration rather than a sad day. So I remember the day and the date that I was diagnosed. And so every year she kind of sends me a card and maybe gives me a gift as well. And so it's never a sad day. And I think that's really huge, because I don't also look at diabetes in a sad way, which I think is really important, because diabetes can be so up and down some days that you really have to build that resilience, which isn't easy. And I think little moments like that do make a big difference. And then, for example, when I was in school, going back to school, high school, after I was diagnosed, my friends all just took it in their stride. They didn't think anything of the fact that I was diagnosed with diabetes. They just took it as part of me being me. And we used to, before lunch, when I checked my blood glucose levels, we used to kind of play the guessing game about what my blood glucose levels would be. And so it was just part of normal life, and I was never bullied in school about it. Nobody batted an eyelid. And so having that support kind of coming through teenagers, which are difficult enough, was really, really important. And then, you know, meeting my husband and recently having a baby, that has been, having a baby with type 1 diabetes has been the hardest thing I've ever done. And so he learned to carbohydrate count. He was cooking a lot of my meals as well, because the volume of work that it takes to try and stay healthy with diabetes while you're pregnant is humongous. So I couldn't have done it without his support then as well.
And that's because we're having the baby within you, it's just altering all your blood levels. You'll just be extra careful what you eat and...
Yeah, the placenta causes a huge amount of insulin resistance, and the parameters that you need to keep your blood glucose levels in before you have a meal and an hour afterwards are incredibly tight. I think they're so tight that I would struggle without the insulin resistance, but adding that on top and then the pressure of knowing you've got this precious life inside you that you're trying to keep healthy, it is just so much pressure on top of you. Your body responds very differently to the food. Your insulin requirements jump up massively as well, so it's a lot to contend with, an awful lot. But it's definitely worth it.
Well, big applause to you and your husband and and the little baby, boy or girl.
A little girl. She's
Congratulations.
absolutely super. She's a bit too interested in my insulin pump and always wants to kind of pull on the wire. So I'm always forever kind of trying to tuck it in away from her. But it's not something I'm going to hide from her as she grows up, because it's part of her mum and she won't know any different.
Yeah, I've got a couple of grandchildren, and they, when they were very, very little, were likewise with my daughter's insulin pumps. It's interesting what you said about your mum sort of creating it into a sort of almost like sort of celebration, sort of the day you were diagnosed. Because my daughter has this sort of a mindset that it is a special day, but it is a. And then her big sister decided to get married on that day. She said, "You've stolen my day! How dare you!" But yeah.
Oh, I can understand her upset there. I mean, a wedding is a big thing, but so is your anniversary as well.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break from the show now, so please don't go away. It's just time for our station sponsors to share a message about their product. Please hang on, and we'll be back in just a minute to continue the show.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that B-Cure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special B-Cure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. B-Cure Laser.
B-Cure Laser.
The station that makes you feel good.
That was an ad from our station sponsors. You're listening to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. So thank you for listening, and let's continue with the show.
It's been really fascinating speaking with you. I think I would just want to just sort of close out a little bit just by asking you to... What advice would you give to anyone, particularly if they've just been diagnosed with type 1 and they're listening to the show, or maybe a parent's listening to the show and some child's just been diagnosed with type 1? What advice would you give with all your 20 years experience and wisdom on this?
I think before I would give advice, I think I would just acknowledge that it's okay to be frightened. It's okay to be upset about the diagnosis. But if possible, over time, try and work towards acceptance. Because in those early days, I think it's so understandable that you spend a lot of time wishing the diabetes away. And the position that we're in at the moment is that we can't, that it's here for the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think the best thing we can do is get to grips with it, learn as much as we can education wise, try and get the tools, the technology, the information that we need to best manage the diabetes. Because the ultimate goal, I think, with living with type 1 diabetes is to live a long and healthy life with it, mm-hmm. which is possible. So I think it's kind of, you know, we've got a lot of control, even though the part of kind of being diagnosed makes you feel quite out of control, I think, whether you're a parent with a child with type 1 or whether you're, you know, the person that's been diagnosed with type 1 yourself. It just feels like you've been diagnosed with this condition out of nowhere. But there are elements that we can control about the condition, such as learning, you know, to carbohydrate count, maybe finding the right technology, whether it's an insulin pump, continuous glucose monitoring, getting all the checks and balances that we need as well. So I think it's kind of not overwhelming yourself, but taking all of that on board, getting the support that you need. Don't be afraid to reach out. So whether that's psychological support, whether that's peer support as well, that is incredibly valuable. To meet other people in the same condition is really, really important. So they would be the major things. And don't let it stop you. It doesn't have to. It just takes a little bit more preparation and planning.
Absolutely. Let's get a few more Olympic and Commonwealth, etc. medalists.
Yes, that would just make my year to see more people with diabetes at that level of sport. But equally, the person that's never done sport before and just gives it a go for the first time is also doing sensationally, because I appreciate it's not easy.
Indeed. Actually, one thing I just thought about, which I didn't actually ask you about, which I, before we close out, you've done a fair bit of volunteering, and I believe that's helping with correct me if I'm wrong, with people's mental health if with diabetes, how that can affect you. Am I correct? Or
so back in 2013, I started a support group because I'm a huge believer that unfortunately there aren't enough services in terms of psychological support for people with diabetes, because it's considered very much a physical condition, which I understand. But, you know, imagine all of the extra, well, you don't have to imagine, you've experienced it yourself with your daughter, that all of the extra decisions that need to be made, how your body changes, the potential for complications and the weight of that. I just think that more psychological support needs to be provided and made available, and the risk of things like eating disorders as well with diabetes. So whilst we don't fill the psychological gap, because obviously that's a specialist professional role, that element of peer support, as I mentioned, I think is really, really important. So pre-COVID, we were providing the opportunity for people living with diabetes, parents and caregivers as well, partners, to just meet up in a really relaxed environment and just have a chat about their diabetes if they want to, not about their diabetes if they don't want to. So things have moved a lot more onto social media now because of the current climate. But yeah, just providing that space for people to kind of unload a little bit and to kind of normalize living with diabetes.
Brilliant. God, well done for that. I'm sure you've helped many people and changed their lives as a result. We're pretty much up on time. I really appreciate your time because you've been very generous with it. And we want to just close out with another of your favourite songs, I think. It's a favourite one anyway. I know why you chose it, but you're going to tell the listeners what the song is and why you chose it. Yeah, please fire away.
So the song is Nelly Furtado, I'm Like a Bird, because it's a song I remember playing on the radio in the early, early days of diagnosis. And every time I hear it, it takes me back there to that point of diagnosis. And it's not necessarily a sad feeling, because it's such a happy song, I suppose, in its own way. And I think it's a good way to kind of look at diabetes as well, that you could feel quite caged in by it, and that's understandable, but at the same time, having the tools, information, education can make you feel a little bit more free with living with the condition.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Melanie, for your time today, and I wish you all the best with your family and with your diabetes moving forward.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Great, thank you.
You're beautiful, and that's for sure. You'll never, ever fade. You're lovely, but it's not for sure. I won't ever change. And though my love is great, and though my love is you to know, I'm like a bird. I'll only fly away. I don't know where my me to tears, even after all these years, and it pains me so much to tell that you don't know me that way, yeah, 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 and though my love is
that was Nelly Furtado and I'm Like a Bird. And that song was chosen by our guest for this week, Melanie Stevenson Gray. You're listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. And if you did miss that interview with Melanie, then please do go back and listen to it, particularly if you have type 1 diabetes or you know of someone, love someone, live with someone who has got type 1 diabetes. Then there's lots of stuff in there to inspire you, to encourage you. Thank you so much, Melanie, for your time that you gave up to do that interview with me. If you are really keen on looking for things to do with diabetes, then there's my other show, the Foot Health Show, this week to celebrate the fact that it is Diabetes Awareness Week and that this Sunday is Diabetes Day, November the 14th. My other show, the Foot Health Show, does have a topic relating to diabetes, which of course is the diabetic foot, and that is with an interview with Professor David Armstrong, who is an amazing podiatric surgeon from America who is all about diabetic foot preservation, limb preservation, actually, not just the feet, of course. It can affect up the legs as well. So please do go and have a listen to that. You'll listen to hear lots of tips about what you can do to help prevent you ever getting into that sort of circumstance. And the other thing as well, of course, is my article in the Health Triangle magazine this month is regarding Jericho foot, or otherwise known as Charcot foot is its proper name. I call it Jericho foot. You'll have to go and read that to find out why. You can do that on the Health Triangle magazine. Go to UK Health Radio's website and you will find where to subscribe there. You can probably actually find that particular article also on my LinkedIn page as well, because I have posted my article on there. But of course, if you do subscribe to the Health Triangle magazine, you get all the other articles as well from all the other presenters. So it's well worth subscribing to learn all about ways you can improve your health. Anyway, thank you for listening this week. Please do tune in again. Please tell all your friends, particularly if they have diabetes, pre-diabetes, type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, gestational diabetes, anything to do with diabetes, then please do get them to listen to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. Have a fantastic week, and I'll be speaking to you again next week. And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Alton with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot, living the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.